This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Rick Britton is with us, local author, historian, cartographer. He's online at rickbritton.com, and he joins us live in studio. How are you, sir?
It's good to see you.
How are you
doing?
I haven't seen you in forever.
I know. I've been calling in.
Yeah. Well, you got a lot going on.
You're on deadline. Lots of different deadlines. Yeah. Lots of map projects, writing projects, lots of deadlines. Well, you know all about that.
Yeah. So what deadlines. Maps are you working on right now? Can you tell us?
I'm juggling about 6 different projects. I just finished a map of Washington, D.C. in 1861 for a novel for Amazon Encore. I just learned about Amazon Encore. Amazon now has its own publishing wing. So you can imagine that they're going to go great guns with that stuff. So this is for a novel. It's called The First Assassin, about somebody attempting to assassinate Lincoln as soon as he arrives in Washington.
Oh, that made up, though. That didn't happen.
No, there were threats and there were rumors.
So it's based
on history. So I did one of those, and I'm doing some apps for Random House. Lots of times the stuff I do from Random House are for novels. And so I just did a map for a novel about a young fella from the Caucasus who travels all the way to France and back right after World War II.
Do you have to read these novels to do the map, or do they just sort of tell you?
No, they send me the important information, and usually what they do is they send me a list of all the things they want labeled so I understand what's important, and they tell me.
Yeah.
You know, what's important.
But then you
got
to go start doing your historical research and
a little bit of research
at existing maps.
Mostly it's getting the maps from the right time period, having the atlases. And as you can imagine, I've got a huge collection of maps and atlases from different time periods.
Yeah. What are the Caucasus?
The Caucasus are the
I've heard of them, but where are they?
Well, now I can answer that question. If you think about all of those breakaway little republics and those little countries around Georgia, North Ossetia, South Ossetia, and there's a ton of others in and around Georgia. So it's in between, and not the Atlanta, Georgia, but Georgia, in Eastern Europe.
They're Georgia.
In between the Black Sea and the Caspian, there's a stretch of land that separates those two bodies of water that's about 400 miles across, and all of those republics are in there, and the Caucasus cut right across.
The Caucasus Mountains.
The Caucasus, right.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Well, there you go.
There it is.
So you're quite busy. We're talking with Rick Britton. 977-1070 is the phone number here in studio. So what we wanted to talk about, I emailed you this, actually. Just
you
out
did,
of curiosity.
And you know what? You got me started, and once I got started in thinking about it, I realized what a great idea it is, and I'd never really thought about it that way.
And what I posed you was it sort of a simple question was, what were like the top, I think I used 15, but
right.
I said, what were the top 15 most important battles in the Civil War that took place in Virginia?
In Virginia,
like,
right.
In Virginia, right. The most important, not, and as you pointed out right away in an email, well, not necessarily the biggest.
Right.
But the most decisive, important battles.
Yeah, from a military point of view, and the criteria that I used, and of course, my list of the top 15 is now up to 19 and growing. So it was very hard to stay within 15, because then I started thinking, I can't really, because of this reason, I can't leave this battle out. And then, of course, if I put that battle in, then this battle has. So the criterion are things like the results of the battle. And we're not talking about size or number of casualties, although a lot of people will recognize a lot of these as some of the biggest battles in the entire Civil War. But a lot of the others are much smaller, but they had important consequences.
Yeah.
So it's the results of the battle. Was it the end of somebody's career as a general? Was it the end of a very important campaign? Did this start off something that was really important? So it's reasons like that, not necessarily size or the horrific nature, the number of the casualties.
And this is a criteria that only history could have, because at the time, they would be looking mostly at the bigger battles and the most loss of life and kind
they
of thing.
They would, but I think you're underestimating the journalists at the time writing. They would understand the major importance of a lot of these. They would understand, especially one in particular. One in particular has, it's not just national importance, it's international importance.
Fair enough. Well, let's start our list. We'll start with Rick Britton. Britain's top most important decisive battles of the Civil War that took place in Virginia.
And we're going to
talk in depth about each one. And
Should we go through the list first?
And do the list, and then we'll start at the top, and we'll just work our way down, and we'll take our time and talk in depth about each one.
Oh, that sounds great,
yeah,
man.
Gosh, we're in no hurry. We're in no hurry, Rick.
Make my day.
This is man. Local this radio. Is,
make my day. This is a lot of fun. Holy cow. Okay. First Manassas, the Monitor versus the Virginia. So we've got a naval battle in there. Couldn't leave that out. Cross Keys and Port Republic in the Shenandoah Valley. And as we talk about them, we'll talk about the dates. Don't worry. Gaines' Mill, Malvern Hill, Second Manassas, Fredericksburg, Chancellorsville, Brandy Station, the Wilderness, Spotsylvania Courthouse, New Market, again in the Shenandoah Valley, Cold Harbor, Trevilian Station, the Crater at during the Petersburg campaign, the Siege of Petersburg in Richmond, Cedar Creek, Five Forks, Sailor's Creek, and Appomattox Courthouse.
There you go. Rick Britton's top 19.
19,
and
yeah.
It might be 20 one day, just to make
20,
it
might be 20
put a nice little bow
in another
on it.
Few minutes.
Yeah. So let's start with at the first here, and that's First Manassas.
First Manassas fought on July 21st, 1861. And, you know, I've talked earlier about the first battle in Virginia in the Civil War, and that's undoubtedly Big Bethel, which was on June 10th. But First Manassas is really the first major battle in Virginia.
And the
in
first
the American,
on your list is the most important battle in Virginia
right,
during the Civil
because
War.
Because it's the first major battle. Now, it took place at Manassas. It's called by the Federals Bull Run after the creek, Manassas after the city there, the town there. It's only about 25 miles from Washington. About 18,000 men engaged on either side. The casualties, by later standards, aren't all that awful. But why was it important? It's important because it's the first major battle of the war. It disavowed the North of the idea that it was going to be over with one campaign. And if it only needed one reason to be important, that's the big importance of it. After this battle, and it's a huge Confederate victory, of course, and it's the battle also where Stonewall Jackson won his nickname, Stonewall, because he stood like a stonewall on Henry House Hill in defense. But if we only needed one reason to make this important is because after this, people in the North started to realize, oh, they are going to fight, and we're not going to be able to just put together an army, march directly to the enemy capital at Richmond, take it, and the war is going to be over.
So going into this battle, we're talking with Rick Britton. Going into this, the generals from the North, by and large, bought into this, that this would be a cakewalk.
Oh, yeah. They're just a rabble. They don't have an army. We've got the regular army. You know, every kind of disingenuous idea that you can imagine. You know, we're better equipped, we're better armed, we have the better officers.
These are just unorganized domestic terrorists.
But really, yeah, but really the battle, because of the nature of the armies on both sides, it's a lot of volunteers and militiamen in the armies on both sides. It's really a conflict between two armed mobs. There's a lot of confusion in this battle by comparison with others. There's a lot of mistaking uniforms. There are Federals in this battle uniformed in gray because that just happened to be the color of the state militia. For example, New Hampshire. New Hampshire had chosen gray as its state color for the militiamen. So had Maine. So, and they're Confederate soldiers dressed in blue. So there's a lot of confusion on both sides. It's really a fight between two armed mobs. But if you're going to have an armed mob, it's easier to have an armed mob and be in defense than have an armed mob and have to attack. And so the Federals were attacking in that, and they got tossed back. And
So the Confederates in Manassas had the advantage because all they had to do was hold the ground.
They had to hold the ground, exactly. And it's a lot. Defense is always a lot easier than attack.
Now, what's this about? When we're growing up, we hear that, you know, reporters and folks took their picnics out and sat on the hill to watch the battle.
And,
is that true?
Yeah, that happened, but the extent of that has become the stuff of legend. So at the very closest, they were about a mile away. So the stories about them actually seeing the battle, they saw the smoke from the battle. They certainly heard the blasts from cannon, because you can hear those at a distance, this booming. And they probably could hear the fire of musketry, especially in volleys, because it sounds kind of, in a distance, it sounds kind of like the ripping of a sheet. Because they fire all together. It sort of has that sound to it. And they saw the smoke and maybe some flashes, but that's all. They didn't really see the battle.
And they didn't
and
run
then, of
in
course,
fear.
They got caught up in the rout.
Oh.
And so a congressman from the North was actually captured in this huge route running back to Washington. The thing was, oh my God, we got to get back to Washington.
So describe this battle to us. What time of day did it start? How long did it last?
It started first thing in the morning on July 21st, 1861. And
again, this is First Manassas.
This is
First
Manassas.
Major battle in Virginia.
And the Confederates were dug in largely behind Bull Run, along about 8 miles of the length of Bull Run. Why Bull Run? Well, it's not very big. People cross it on the Warrenton Turnpike 29. You can look down and you see it's not very deep. The problem was it has really steep banks, and it did back then. So it's only fordable in certain places, and of course, they were covering all of those fords along an 8 mile stretch. The plan was really great. Irvin McDowell was the federal commander. He came up with the idea of detaching about 17, 18,000 of his men and doing a flank march and getting across Bull Run to attack the Confederates on their left. And at the very beginning, it was successful, and the fighting started off on Matthews Hill, and then the Confederates were forced back to Henry House Hill, and that became the center of the fighting for the rest of that day into the afternoon. It was a very hot day, July 21st, and Stonewall Jackson stood on Henry House Hill, and his Virginia Brigade became the very center of the Confederate line, and so things kind of swirled around him, but his men didn't move. And then there was a series of attacks and counterattacks across the top of Henry House Hill. Calling it a hill is kind of a misnomer. It's really a plateau. It's a very large hill, so the top of it is almost like a table. So once they got up onto it, the Federals attacking his defensive position, there were attacks and counterattacks back and forth across that hill.
Let me ask
you
this. I've read somewhere, we're talking with Rick Britton, and the phone lines are open, 977-1070. We're counting down his top most important battles of the Civil War that took place in Virginia. Rick, I read somewhere where this description of Jackson as standing like a stone wall was actually meant as a negative by one guy who said, he's not moving forward, he's not advancing, he's not coming to help, he's just standing back there like a stone wall.
Yeah, we don't know for sure, and we may never know for sure, but certainly that is a possibility. The man who gave him his sobriquet, the man who gave him his nickname, was Brigadier General Bernard Bee, who was commanding a small brigade that was in advance on Matthews Hill. And as he was falling back, he rode back, as his men were falling back under the pressure from the enemy, he rode back to Jackson and said, "Sir, they're pushing us back." And Jackson famously said, "Well, sir, we will give them the bayonet." And so Bee was moved by this, this appearance of solidity on this hill, and he rode back to his men and he said, "Men, there stands Jackson like a stone wall, rally behind the Virginians." But also he could have meant, "There stands Jackson like a stone wall. He didn't move forward to reinforce us. He stayed back there like a stone wall, immovable, immobile."
Right.
Stonewalling us, say.
But we don't know if it was positive or negative.
But here's what happened. Here's what happened. Bernard Bee died at First Manassas that afternoon. And so there was nobody, you know, he wasn't around for the reporters to ask him afterwards, "What exactly did you mean by that?"
Yeah. But after that, the name Stonewall
stuck,
and it was a positive
thing. It's a positive. And then his brigade of five Virginia regiments, one of the most famous Confederate brigades in the entire war, was forever named the Stonewall Brigade.
So
because they stood.
How did this end? Did it go into the evening?
It ended with reinforcements coming up on the Confederate side and a large attack against the Federal right flank that started to crumble the entire line, and they started to rout and to run, throwing away everything. I mean, the route of their flight was littered with artillery pieces, weapons.
And they ran all the way back to D.C., right?
Pretty much. It took some guys like 3 days. And the WAGs, of course, commented, you know, it took them like a week to get down there, and it took them a couple of days to run back.
Yeah.
But they got back, and of course, it was a really dark day in the White House, as you can imagine, because they were expecting the Confederates to appear right across the Potomac.
Yeah.
Right.
But must have been the opposite in the South. I mean, the first major battle of the Civil War is a Confederate victory.
And that's another aspect that makes this so important, is it tended to prove to the Confederates, you know, that one Southerner was worth, 4 or 5 Yankees. you know, as every Southerner loved to brag.
Yeah.
And let them try to come down here and we'll show them. And that tended to prove to them, unfortunately, because, you know, that's not true, of course.
Where did the rebel yell start? Was it at First Manassas, or did that whole mythology of the rebels and the Confederates sort of,
you know,
yelling
you,
into battle, when did that start?
You have actually stumped me with that one. I would have
I'm
to
sorry,
look.
Sorry, I don't like to do that.
Yeah, I know. I don't like you to do that. No, I would have to look up where they claim that that was first heard. I don't believe it's at First Manassas, though. I don't think it's this early that the rebel
yell was
heard.
But it was a shared yell on the part of the Confederates as they went into battle.
And fortunately, there were some recordings made in the 1920s and in the teens
Really?
Of surviving Confederate veterans. So we actually have recordings of what the rebel yell sounded like.
We got to get that. Yeah. Send me a link to that.
We'll play that next week.
Yeah. That
I think people will be surprised. It's not perhaps what we think it is. It sounds more like people calling hogs or something like that. It's very shrill. It's very high pitched.
Interesting.
Yeah.
But if you've got, you know, hundreds of thousands of guys doing it at one time while they're rushing at you with guns.
Oh yeah.
You know.
Oh yeah.
So we have time for one more battle on your list today.
Okay.
So
we're only getting two a day.
Well,
wow, that's
we're in no hurry.
That's
we're just going to enjoy this. So the next one is this naval battle, right?
Yeah, the next one is this naval battle, and I hinted at it a little bit earlier. This one actually has international implications. It's the Monitor versus the CSS Virginia, and it was the first actually fought on March 9th, 1862 in Hampton Roads. So Hampton Roads is at the very tip there of the Virginia Peninsula, where the James River comes into the Chesapeake Bay and then flows a little bit further into the Atlantic. And it was actually the first action between ironclads anywhere. Now, a lot of navies had...
So this is before the Monitor and the Merrimack.
It is the Monitor and the Merrimack.
I'm sorry,
it's
okay.
Just that the Merrimack is the wrong... is the wrong name for the Virginia. The Merrimack is the name, so we'll tell the story. The Merrimack was the name of the USS Frigate that was burned at Gosport Navy Yard at Portsmouth down there by the Federal Army when they had to by the Federals when they had to evacuate. And it burned all the way down to the waterline. It was a fairly new vessel. It actually been christened in the 1850s, and it was a screw frigate. It had engines and a propeller, so it had a power to it. It was aside from the sail, so it's a large vessel with three masts, but it also has a screw propeller. So the Confederates looked at this and said, "Let's take this thing that has been burnt to the waterline, and let's build an iron casemate on top of it, mount the guns inside of it, and that's how the USS Merrimack, which was built in Massachusetts and named for the Merrimack River. So actually, most histories actually misspell it. It's named for the Merrimack River, so the spelling should end with a CK. But most of the histories have taken the K off the end of it. That's how the Merrimack was turned into the CSS Virginia. So this is the battle. You know, what happened is, and you know, journalists, we kind of underestimate the power of journalists through history. The Monitor versus the Merrimack sounds a lot nicer. It has that alliteration.
Yeah.
So journalists used that name, but that's not the correct name for the battle. So
I never knew this.
It's the Monitor versus the Virginia, the CSS Virginia.
Oh,
right,
cool.
Right. So it was built to threaten the shipping in Hampton Roads, and one of the reasons they did it down there is because Fortress Monroe, which is at the very tip of the Virginia Peninsula.
Yeah, still
was
there.
Forever, yeah, I just saw it a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Was forever held by federal forces, and so was Newport News. And so with that at the end of the Virginia Peninsula, that was a threat to southern shipping in the James River and the Chesapeake Bay.
Sure thing, yeah.
So let's build this monster, this iron monster. And the thing was absolutely huge, and it mounted 10 very large cannon. Let's build this monster and then get out there and destroy the federal shipping. But the reason this is important is because it was actually the first battle between ironclads. Now, there had been ironclads in other navies before and in European navies, but there had never been an incident where an ironclad had fought another ironclad. And so this changed naval warfare forever. It marks the beginning of the end of any wooden fleet anywhere in the world is this combat. And it's a draw because, you know, the balls are bouncing off. Solid shot. The shells are bouncing off of each other. Now, they suffered casualties. And casualties, unfortunately, were suffered on either side just by guys leaning up against the casemate walls when a shell would hit on the opposite side, just dying from concussion.
Oh, my God.
Inside the Merrimack, inside the Confederate ship, men were killed by flying splinters from the concussion on the outside of this iron plating. The iron plates were rolled at Tredegar. So it was very much of a, you know, Tredegar Ironworks in Richmond, in Richmond, right along the water there. So it's very much a Virginia product, this weapon. And then later on, when the Confederates had to abandon the cities down there during the Peninsula Campaign, and we'll get to the Peninsula Campaign on another episode, it had to be scuttled because they couldn't bring it up the James River. One of the problems with the Virginia, the Merrimack, was that it drew too much water. And so they couldn't bring it up the James River. So
couldn't go in shallow water.
So they had to deny it to the enemy, so they had to scuttle it.
Rick Britton, he's online at rickbritton.com, and he joins us each week, and we are counting down and exploring his pick for the most important decisive battles of the Civil War that took place here in Virginia. Thank you, Rick, so much.
Thank you. It was a lot of fun.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SeavillePodcast.com for more.